Hello and welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
Jake Nguyen.
And I'm Sebastian.
And today we're talking about the Canadian Gay and Lesbians Chamber of Commerce's conversation around youth entrepreneurs and kind of what barriers they face. Now, we're going to cut in a few moments to an interview we had with the CEO of the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, Daryl.
Daryl Schumann.
Schumann,
the
yes.
The CEO. It's not a non-for-profit.
No, he is called the co-founder and vice chair of the board.
Oh, there you go.
There we go.
I was thinking CEO. That doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Well, actually, in non-profits, you can have like chief operating officer and stuff.
Not for a chamber of commerce, mind you. If he's sitting on a chamber of commerce, everyone who sits on a chamber of commerce, except for maybe one or two people who are permanent staff, by definition, they also do something else. That's part of what it means to be a Chamber of Commerce. So for all we know, he's the CEO of...
Something else? No, but he isn't, because we asked. And, and the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce is pretty much what he does. So they won a grant through Ontario 150. They had a number of other supporting organizations, such as Invest Ottawa, the Windsor Essex Economic Development, City of Hamilton, City of Toronto, Pink Pages, Travelgate Canada, Outvisions, and a whole bunch of other ones. Oh, the Ontario Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. So maybe for the benefit of the folks listening, do you want to describe what a Chamber of Commerce is?
Chamber of Commerce is kind of like... It's kind of like a guild, and it's kind of like a union, and it's kind of like neither of those things, but it also is. Basically, it is it's an association of usually small businesses based in a region, so the Ontario one would be everyone in Ontario, who are trying to sort of mutually support each other and improve business relations, economics, trade, what have you, within a region. It's kind of like having a business improvement association or a street association, but on a larger scale. So here in Ottawa, we have BIAs. We have the business improvement associations. Not every city has a BIA. Hamilton, mentioning that, they do have street associations. So they have the Ottawa Street Association. They have the Lock Street Association. So they have similar things like that. It's just all the businesses on one street or in one part of town that sort of mutually support each other and make decisions that would benefit all of them. So,
so for example, they might put new benches in, or they might put some flower beds along the street to encourage more people to come and visit those shops in those streets, support those businesses.
The market, the Byward Market BIA here in Ottawa is actually very active in keeping the market district both modern but also traditional at the same time. They work very hard at keeping that balance of allowing the district to progress while also staying true to its roots. And so some of them, sometimes it'll just be something like, how can you redecorate your storefront in a way that looks nice but also stays consistent with the theme, so that...
Like the character of the area.
The character of the area, yeah.
So in the case of the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce, what they all really have in common is that they are, most of them are Canadian, owned and operated by Canadian gays and lesbians, or just queer folks. I mean, of course, all of these organizations got their names in the 90s, 80s. This one actually, I think, was founded in 2003, I think you said.
So, I mean, 14 years, I remember.
Yeah, so a bit before the alphabet soup kind of became a thing.
Oh, no, it was around then. It just wasn't what it is now.
Yeah. So if you're like, oh my gosh, Canadian gays and lesbians, what about the rest of the alphabet soup? Well, I mean, it's really difficult to rebrand your entire organization, especially if you're constantly having to rebrand it.
Yeah.
Like EGAL Canada is Equalities for Gays and Lesbians Everywhere. But they don't really call themselves that.
Yes.
And who was it last week that I could not find the name of?
GLAAD.
Yes, Gays and Lesbian GLAAD. Association advocating
against defamation. Yeah.
There you go. So gays and lesbians is a common...
And even in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when you said gays and lesbians, bisexuals were sort of understood.
Yeah.
But then, of course, that's by erasure, and then...
Yeah.
But it was considered to be understood, but I mean, that's... The fact that it was understood as a problem, but it was all, they were invited to the party. It was just their name wasn't on the door. Anyway,
So what I liked about these guys was it wasn't just queer-owned businesses. Like, for example, apparently there's somebody in the Ontario province is a lesbian-owned company that cleans carpets, like in stores and stuff.
Good lord, the number of jokes.
I know.
Did they embrace it?
I hope so. but yeah, no, there's certainly a diversity. I'm not going to suggest that the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce is just, you know, freelance interior designers.
Yeah.
But it is a lot of organizations doing really different things. Like there's a lesbian-owned construction company.
Mm-hmm.
Giving you a look.
Okay. that's not quite so punny, but yeah.
But this construction company does work all over North America. Like, it's huge. They're very big.
Okay.
But they also do accreditation. So if you are a queer-owned business person, you wouldn't be queer-owned. You would be a queer business person.
Mm-hmm.
Who owns the business, mm-hmm. they accredit queer businesses. And the reason why that's, I'm like, why would I need to be accredited? Surely what I do...
For listeners who are not small business owners, what does it mean to be accredited?
Yeah, well, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
So the only reason why I kind of figured out why that was remotely important in any way, and maybe I will stand corrected when CGLCC hears this, but they run a program called a supplier diversification program. So what everybody knows, everybody's heard of the idea that if you have a boardroom of 12 white cisgendered men,
mm-hmm.
their thinking is going to be the decisions of white cisgendered men. You throw a couple of women in there, mm-hmm. a couple of people of color, maybe a homo or two, and the decisions made are very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
So with that idea, what Daryl likes to say is Corporate Canada wants to diversify their supply chains. So let's not just keep buying carpet cleaning from straight white men constantly and get your carpet cleaning from straight white men and your paint jobs from straight white men and your construction from straight white men and your fruits and vegetables from straight white men. So what they're trying to do is kind of like mix it up a little bit at almost every level. So diversifying their employees, diversifying their investments, diversifying their suppliers. So at that point, having somebody being able to say, yes, we hereby certify they are homos.
Okay.
That's when it becomes important.
Now, is it small businesses only, or does it also include sole proprietorships?
I didn't have that conversation.
I actually believe it would be
that would count
for sole proprietorship as well, because from what I gathered, I was talking to him, remember?
Yeah.
And there was that one point where I asked if what's the definition of a queer business?
So, right.
And apparently it's not just a business, but it's more that the person owning and working for the business.
Right.
So you don't have to have a pride flag on your business. You don't have to, you don't need to sell like eroticas.
Rainbow flags.
Yeah. You don't have to be on the village to be a gay business. You just have to be queer.
And to be clear, again, for listeners who may not be small business owners, a sole proprietorship is a company where the owner and sole employee is the company from a legal perspective. So
I'm a sole proprietor. I run NL Smith Consulting. I don't do any consulting work. Although, if you are interested, you can reach me at 613. I'm kidding. But the idea is that when I filed my taxes, I filed my taxes as a business. And if I did have any clients, and of course, I mean, the idea then is that you pay the tax on your employees and on your business earnings, but then because there's only you get the one back, and it's just...
The tax laws are a little bit different if you're a sole proprietor. So things like a lot of lawyers are sole proprietors if they don't belong to a firm. A lot of bookkeepers, if they're freelance, will be sole proprietors. A lot of...
Journalists, even if they're freelance.
Journalists, quite often as well. So, and that's actually sort of the future of business in Canada, is consulting and independent small businesses with exactly one person involved. Something which, by the way, Elizabeth May is the only one who's actually spoken about on a political level. But that's a completely different conversation.
That is a very different conversation.
But yeah, so this might be your future. If you are a young person in university wondering what your future career would look like, chances are it's going to be you at home with your computer doing stuff remotely under contract or subcontract. And if so, something like this might be useful for you.
For sure.
I mean, it's actually more like sole proprietorship and using contracts are much more popular nowadays in Canada. Anywhere really, because it's simple. It's much more simpler. Well, from an HR perspective, the difference mainly is that if you are a sole proprietorship or a contractor, you don't have a boss, and even if you do have a boss, they would not have to take responsibility for you. Mm. So the vicarious liability, it's kind of gone. So just by reusing contractors or using quality contractors, you kind of phase out any responsibility of having full-time employees. And that just makes it simple.
But yes, no.
Do you know if they do any advocacy?
No, it's more about networking and connecting. So when we were talking about it, we're like, you know, what's kind of the benefits of it? And really, it's a club, essentially. So, you know, let's say you're a carpet cleaning company, as I mentioned, and maybe there's a gay guy that owns a fleet of office buildings. Well, now you know, like, oh gosh, you know, there's these lesbians I know that do carpet cleaning, and I've got all of these carpets. You know, let's kind of support our own. And I think that's what really came up a few times, the idea of it as being a network, and not just a network, but rather being a tool to create a sense of community amongst business owners.
Do you know if they have, apart from accrediting like that, do you know if they have any other checks and balances? And what I mean by that is something that a lot of Chamber of Commerce's have, not all of them, but many of them. I only know this because I come from a family of small business owners, and growing up, my uncles and my mom were all in multiple chambers of commerce, so I know the details about some of them. But anyway, a lot of them, once a year, you have to submit the results of a corporate audit, and you have to show that your books are clean and that you're a legitimate business. You have to indicate that you are not a front for some criminal syndicate or something or other, and so you need a very lightweight police background check every other year. Things like that to make sure that you are a clean business who pays your taxes, follows the law, pays your employees equitably, all that. And so there's a lot of chambers of commerce that have these sort of internal bylaws, and then by being a part of a chamber of commerce, it actually shows to the world that you have been double-checked as being a company worth hiring.
Sure. See, I don't think we talk about that specifically, but we did talk about like the barriers to LGBT youth entrepreneurs trying to start a business and join a chamber of commerce. Well, part of that is that if you are a youth, an LGBT youth, chances are you don't have enough of funding already.
Yeah.
And you would be really intimidated. So I go to a networking business event. There's a lot of business networking groups. But like when you go there, usually those businesses are already established.
Yeah.
And those are people with experience. So they already got everything that they've done. If you're trying to create a community, an LGBT community that doesn't exist yet, especially in business, you have to invite everyone first and then check for their like accreditation and everything. Because if you just like, if you're not an official business yet and we have to check all these before we can invite you in and discuss, no one would discuss.
So that segues really nicely to the first of the group discussion questions. So they asked everybody there, and this was the fifth session that they went to, and in a few moments, once we've had this conversation, I'll play the interview I did with Daryl. So the question was, what challenges and or obstacles have you faced as an LGBTQ entrepreneur? Also consider intersectionality, location, etc., etc.
Yep.
If you are considering starting a business, what do you think will be your greatest challenge? What obstacle or challenge, real or imagined, do you think that you will need the most help in overcoming? Now, it's interesting because there was somebody there from Invest Ottawa, and they were talking about businesses or entrepreneurs broadly speaking. And it seemed that, you know, the real issue is, you know, access to startup funds, you know. And these are things that everybody would love to show up, I have a business idea, awesome. Angel investor shows up and goes, you get $1 million. Doesn't happen like that. It does not happen like that. You know, you have to put your nose to the ground. You have to create a very convincing business plan.
Even the cases that are like that are not like that. So the two famous cases are...
Like Facebook was one, I think.
Facebook and Apple. Both of them, they were given angel investments very early on in the process. But that was after they had already existed for a year and a half doing mediocre work. And so you have to exist first, living basically in abject poverty, as you pay for everything yourself, usually getting a second job to pay for the startup business, and then somebody who believes in you comes in and saves the day. But even then, you need to have that, you need to have enough foothold so that people can see that you might be worth something. So even angel investor stories are not angel investor stories because you need that little bit first. It's very, small businesses are complicated.
It is, and it kind of segue into the other, I think it was like when you mention that there's a barriers to entrepreneur, because there are already all types of barriers to entrepreneurs already, funding, mm-hmm. marketing, HR problems. So that is not just specialized in youth, immature, and LGBT, but it also has to do with whether or not you want to establish yourself as an LGBT business. Because if you're looking for funding with an LGBT marking or an LGBT stamp, would that help your business? Would that help make your business? Mm-hmm. Would that do anything to your business? That's mostly what people are concerned about. Because when you're like looking to pay the bill, you're looking to put your products out there, you're not looking to like, you know, say that I'm an LGBT person and buy this because I'm an LGBT person.
We're going to be talking more about what these challenges and obstacles are just after this interview that I did with Daryl Sherman, and we'll be playing our first song as well, which is Into the Night, which is San Marino's entry into Eurovision, because Eurovision's coming up. No gossip this week on Eurovision.
Okay.
All quiet on the Western Front.
You mean Southeastern Front?
You mean the Russians?
Well, I mean, Russians have been in the news, but not in terms of Eurovision. So
Southeastern,
I mean,
being Crimea.
Either way,
yeah.
This is the interview with Daryl, and we'll be back just after this. So just at the end of this this kind of networking and outreach event, kind of about LGBT entrepreneurs, this is the fifth of five sessions you mentioned. How does this kind of shape up with the other sessions that you've had so far?
I think we're hearing basically common themes throughout all five sessions in terms of some of the challenges and experiences that LGBT youth are facing as they're either starting or growing their business.
What are those kind of unique challenges? Because, I mean, it makes folks ponder, you know, are there still barriers to LGBT folks to kind of start up a business?
Yeah, so certainly we're hearing a lot of the same challenges and obstacles that all entrepreneurs are facing in terms of financing, HR issues, even just writing up business plans. So those are kind of the common things that we would expect to hear. But certainly there are kind of some unique obstacles and challenges, such as, you know, how to create networks, how do you build those networks and create kind of safe spaces and just feel comfortable being out as an LGBT employer and entrepreneur.
Now, in the conversation today, one of the things that I liked is that there's definitely a generational difference in terms of what the barriers are. But one thing that seems to be consistent is if you have certain privileges in terms of being able to pass as a cis white straight male, you know, that opens more doors. Is that something that you've found come up in other conversations?
Yeah, and that's one thing that we really wanted to try to address in these consultation sessions, was really to get a broad perspective of the LGBT community and really understand all of the challenges. You know, that intersectionality is really important, and so we don't want to just hear, and we didn't want to hear just from gay white males. We wanted to hear from all communities, and so that was, you know, throughout these five sessions, we did have the opportunity to hear from many different perspectives. And that was really valuable, and that will definitely help shape what we're able to develop from this.
Now, how, you know, if folks are listening and kind of certainly have like an idea, or they'd like to get involved, and maybe they missed this event, or they're in parts of the country where you didn't get a chance to visit, how does somebody listen to this thing? You know what, I have some ideas I'd like to share. How do they get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. We're open to, we want to hear from them. And so they can visit our website at cglcc.ca/youth. That's cglcc.ca/youth. And what we'll be doing probably in the next week or so, we'll be putting out a survey that they can go online and they can fill out. And just again, really, this, what we've done in these consultation sessions is asking them about their experiences. And that's what the survey will be doing as well. So it's just another forum for them to share their thoughts.
So one of the things I think I got out of this is that the one of the end goals is to create a mentorship program amongst maybe other initiatives. You know, how important is a mentorship program in the queer community in terms of creating a sense of community?
Well, I think what we've heard from over the last five sessions is that it's a very important thing, and I think that's one thing that we've found has often lacking within the LGBT community, and especially in some of the more rural and rural regions and kind of non-urban centers, and where they may not have that network as readily available. So I think having access to mentors or just other LGBT business owners that they can talk to and seek support and input is really key.
So the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce certifies queer businesses. Is that kind of an impetus for queer businesses to come out, as it were, and get that certification? What's the benefits there?
Yeah, certainly. You know, one of the biggest benefits is really an opportunity to gain access to Corporate Canada. Corporate Canada is looking to do business with diverse companies and diverse suppliers broadly, and specifically with LGBT-owned businesses. And so this helps LGBT businesses get their foot in the door to some of those large corporations that they may have not have had access to previously. So that's, I think, probably one of the biggest advantages. But certainly, just at the community level, being able to support and grow your own LGBT community is great, and to network and do business amongst yourselves is another key benefit.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me, and we'll be having more of a conversation on this topic, but that's all for now. We're going to jump to a song and then back to the studio.
Spirit of the night, burning as a level fire.
Hello and welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. You were just listening to Into the Night, a very fun song. You thought it was Sam Smith.
Sam Sparrow.
Oh, Sam Sparrow is amazing.
Yeah.
This is true. I thought, yeah, that makes sense now. Yeah.
I feel embarrassed, kind of embarrassed. I don't know who that is.
British guy, gay guy. Amazing pipes on him, though. Mm. It's kind of like his singing talent is kind of like Cher. It doesn't sound like he has talent, and then you try to sing his songs, and then you're like, how did he do that? Where it's just like he holds a note for like a minute and a half straight, and you're just like, where is it coming from? Does he have like lungs hidden in his thighs?
Black and Gold.
Yes.
That was one of his. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll probably give it a try later.
And Happiness also is a very... Yeah.
Maybe we'll play that at the end of the show instead of B-52s.
B-52?
Okay. So we were discussing earlier the topic of openly gay GLBT entrepreneurs. This is all couched around the idea of the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce looking, through funding from Ontario 150, looking to create a mentorship program and networking possibilities for GLBT youth. Actually, one of the things that came up, and before we get into the real conversation here, one of the things that came up was, in terms of queer youth, you really have to go to them. I mean, I know entrepreneurs are incredibly self-motivated. Our friend Phil is a very good example of a go-getter. Like, he goes and 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 he passes the Duracell bunny and then he goes and he goes and he goes. He's definitely a go-getter, but queer youth, broadly speaking, I don't think they're go-getters.
Yeah, this is one of the factors of looking at entrepreneurship in the queer community that actually makes things very complicated because, I mean, it's that issue that keeps disappearing when people talk about queer issues, which is mental health.
Yeah.
That queer people have an uncommonly high rate of anxiety and depression. And being a small business owner when you have anxiety and depression makes things that much more difficult.
Because things gonna fail.
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah. Because a really, really, really good new business in the first 2 years will only make a small loss.
Mm.
Because that's just how it is. Unless it's sort of like the situation that I'm in now and that you used to be in, which is you start a small business because of a contract. You're given a contract, and then you form a small business around it, and then you expand out from there. At which point, you're kind of guaranteed this thing, but you're also in a very precarious position because you're relying on one contract, and blah, 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 it goes on. But still, point is, I mean, the when you are a small business owner, you don't get... You know, the green shield coverage for
health insurance.
For health insurance for mental health treatment, because mental health treatment in Canada is not covered, at least not in Ontario it is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you're trying to be motivated and get all this stuff off the ground when you're having troubles getting yourself off the ground in the morning, I mean, it's...
And I think that does segue very nicely into the conversation we wanted to have around is access to resources and support tie to your passing. Now, with the politics of passing, I'm going to quickly break it down for our listeners. So it kind of comes out of the conversation around trans folks. So there's some trans folk like Laverne Cox who are like, oh my gosh, that was a man? I would never have guessed it.
Well, except that she's 6'2".
Yeah, I mean, extremely tall. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's some trans folks you're like, well, I never knew. And then there's some trans folks you're like, my, that is a man in a dress. Mm. You know, there's it's clear as day. So the politics here is that if you can more look convincing like the gender you're trying to portray, you have more access towards not being harassed or bullied or discriminated against because people don't think you're defying gender roles.
In other words, if you look like a cisgender person.
Yeah, absolutely. Cis being gender...
corresponding to your biological sex.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So the idea here about passing privilege is that somebody who doesn't need to put the extra effort in, who, you know, already looks like the dominant support group. So I am white. I am very male-looking. I am British and charismatic at times. You know, so if I walk into a bank to ask for a small business loan, I mean, at that point, it just falls down to my financials. But if you've got somebody who might have mental health, somebody who might be in a precarious work environment, somebody of color, somebody who's trans, you know, those bank people looking at giving those loans, maybe a little less so now.
Mm-hmm.
But back in the day, you know, that would be a barrier, you know? Well, I don't think that you are the best fit for the bank would kind of be the conversation in the way it goes. It's worth noting that I believe CIBC, RBC, and Scotiabank are all corporate partners with the Canadian Gaming and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce.
Ooh.
So I do want to put that out there, that there are some banks that are doing really well. And I think Barclays in the UK have introduced gender-neutral pronouns in all of their banking.
Hmm.
And I think HSBC also has introduced gender-neutral pronouns in their banking. But this even goes even further. So I'm a white guy, and I already have invested in a house, so I own a car. Or because I'm a white guy, I got a job earlier on, and now I've got like $4,000 or $5,000 in savings. So the bank looks at that and goes, cool, good on you.
Yeah.
Risk your house and we'll give you a nice big loan for your business. And, you know, white people with solid incomes can do that.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at trans folks, when you're looking at gay men who are so gay, they might have trouble getting hired. There was a news story about men with gay voices don't get hired as often. You know, people of color, you know, they face a lot of barriers of entry. Aboriginal folks.
Yeah.
Anyone with mental health.
And quite often what will happen is if you look at the queer community and you do see the occasional successful white gay man, for example, quite often when you dig into his past, well, not dig, you ask about his past a little bit, you find out that he started late, that, you know, he had his own setbacks by coming out. And so he was doing at 28 what a straight guy would have been doing at 22 quite often. And so, I mean, that's not the greatest tragedy if you're talking about things like the kind of barriers that, you know, trans POCs go through. But that 5-year setback can have a huge impact on the rest of your career. You have a little bit less savings, you have a little bit less stability, you're 5 years closer to retirement. It's
a lot of things, a lot of variables, because in 5 years, a lot of things could change.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine 5 years earlier, it was 2012, five years earlier than that, probably 2008, 2009, during the freaking depression, and no one's wanted to do business.
Economic crisis.
Economic crisis.
Depression was the 20s.
But. Yeah, my bad. But like, at the same time, you know.
It was a depression, it just wasn't the depression.
But if you add all of those variables together, having a complex gender identity is not something that, you know, you want to deal with when you have to, like, go to the bank and, you know, try to show them the best of you. Like, if you're coming to the bank and looking like straight white male who established, have a wife and kids with a mortgage, chances are you probably get a decent loan.
Mm-hmm.
If you look like a woman of sorry for my terminology, but let's say a butch lesbian. If you look like a butch lesbian by stereotype, chances are people look at you and may not think that you are as financially stable as the straight white male.
But they're not just making bets on you, they're also making bets on the business.
Yeah.
So let's say you are a butch lesbian and you go into opening a string of daycare centers. Are they thinking, oh, are people going to go to a daycare center run by a butch lesbian?
And
then they start putting, there's a lot of qualitative.
Well, something else, I mean, a lot of this really what it comes down to is how risk averse are you? Because they want to give money to people who are not risk averse and who will make their money back and who will not.
So essentially, how risky are you as a bet?
Yeah. Whereas if you're a straight person with a child, you're going to be very risk averse. You're going to be very careful and methodical, and you're going to pay the money back. Whereas if you are unmarried and you belong to some kind of minority group, chances are you have a sort of invisible freedom. You have a lot of mobility that if you don't like something, you can just move to Sarnia. Why Sarnia? Because who looks for you in Sarnia?
That's come up before in the show.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, I've had a couple friends who ran away from home and moved to Sarnia because nobody looks for you in Sarnia. But anyway, and that is a thing as well, that when you're a queer person, people don't trust you because they also feel you have no roots. You can just pick up and leave.
Here's a funny story. Who's not exactly queer, but I have told you about this before. So I'm in college right now, and I have to do a lot of teamwork. But because technically I'm on a student visa, so I have to do a lot of, so I have to pay a lot of money to be here, so I can't afford just to drop a class.
And that guy at college that's with you who can drop it at the drop of a hat, you know, he has the privilege of being able to walk away. And you don't. And I think that relates very easily back to the conversations we're talking about with folks who, you know, for some reason or another, can't just try again next time. Mm-hmm. You know, if they invest all of their life savings because they don't have that much to begin with, because they're less advantaged in terms of getting the savings in the first place, you know, trying and trying again is a challenge. You mentioned mental health earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, these are all of these added conditions to folks who are LGBT, who want to be entrepreneurs. I hope we're not being too dissuasive. I hope we're not trying to convince people not to chase their dreams. But what we have to really come to at the end is the idea that access to resources, to networking, to opportunities is sadly still tied to privilege. Maybe the Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce can change that with their new programming. That's the hope. But we're going to cheer ourselves up with a bit of a new song now. This is The Peptides with Don't Believe in Love from the Ottawa area, of some of them in Toronto. And we'll be back just after this. Welcome back to Cancria, home of Canada's Queer Major. My name is Luke Smith, and joining me is Sebastian and Jake, and we are talking about LGBTQ plus entrepreneurs.
Yes.
And what barriers they face, and so on and so forth. But I want to take a minute to talk about, let's say you're lucky, you strike it rich, your business is not a failure, and you have a bit of a success. So in terms of the LGBT world, mm-hmm. should you be an openly gay business? Is that going to impact how you run your business? Is there a moral reasoning to be open?
Well, we could start this by talking about instances where you would have a moral obligation mm-hmm. to be out. So, for example, feminist bookstores and feminist sex toy stores. If you are trans, lesbian, or bisexual, it would behoove you to let people know.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, Wanda Cody, who's a regular guest on our show here, who owns
Wicked Wanda's,
Ottawa's largest kink supply store.
Yeah.
She is very, very open about her identity as someone who actually participates in kink as well.
Yeah.
That she stocks the shelves with the stuff that she would buy, and yeah. she does not stock the shelves with things that she thinks are dangerous.
Or low quality.
Yeah. And that comes from her open identity.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are instances.
The lady who owns Venus Envy, which is actually in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and also in Ottawa, also openly lesbian.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with Good For Her in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So there are instances where you win so much by being open with who you are. But does that apply to, for example, a company that specializes in fundraising and media relations, which we actually know somebody
who does that? Yes, we do. Yes.
I think I touched base on this in the meeting with Daryl, but I think it has to do with what kind of effect like the LGBT lens would have on your business. Mm-hmm. Like you said, for example, if you have a product or service that is LGBT or like a sexual-based or gender-based product, then yeah, that totally makes sense. Okay, well, let's just.
So
okay,
even then, there are instances like this is really getting nitpicky here, but this mm-hmm. is still like there are instances like my one contract that I have right now, I would not be able to even have if I weren't openly gay. It's part of the position. But yeah, so Bridgehead,
yeah.
If you are a franchise owner, do you win anything?
Bridgehead is owned by a lesbian couple.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, the whole thing is.
But Tim Hortons, do you really gain anything by being a gay Tim Hortons franchisee?
Here's one thing I think Tim Hortons wouldn't win, is that Tim Hortons decided to go into the States.
Well, they were bought by the amount they had gone in before, yeah.
Right. Yeah, but they did decide to go in. And in that specific situation, probably having the gay flag on Tim Hortons might not be a good idea.
So, I mean, if you're an American company such as Tim Hortons, just to pick on them for a moment, and you decide to open up a business in North Carolina, but yes, so the way I do, you're right. You know, there's certainly maybe some industries or so on where you don't want to. But let's take the tech industry for an example.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got some shining stars like Tim Cook, the guy who's the CEO of Apple at the moment, who is openly gay.
Two out of five of the original co-founders of Facebook are gay as well.
Yeah. So there's some really big high flyers in the tech industry. But I mean, there's a lot of, well, they see you code HTML or Python or something, you know.
Yeah.
And you're trying to get a job, just basic level, entry level stuff, you know. Is it useful to know as a gay man that the boss of that software development company is gay? Is it useful to know that, you know, that those doors are open?
Now, it's interesting, actually. I think maybe software is not necessarily a good example, because there were some openly gay programmers, and they were just the coders. This is not art design. This is not storyboarding. This is just coders in Rockstar Games. Now, Rockstar Games is most well known for making the Grand Theft Auto series.
Yeah.
GTA 5 being the most profitable video game in history, which made almost a billion. It made a lot of money. But they also made, there was one of the GTA games is The Ballad of Gay Tony. Mm. And they also made Bully, which is the first game where you could actually make your character into a gay man by going around just seducing all the boys.
Hmm.
But it was sort of a hidden Easter egg, and it was something that the coders pushed for. And in the animation industry, a lot of people can't pronounce his last name, so it's just John Kay. Anyway, the guy who made Ren and Stimpy, he's a Canadian animator, and he had somebody who worked in his mail room, and all he did was sort the mail, and he was openly gay. And he helped influence Ren and Stimpy to become a couple, because he noticed all of the gay jokes just sitting there waiting to be made. And then John Kay was like, sure, let's do it. But again, this had to do with the way that John Kay ran his business, that everybody from like the people who sorted the mail.
It's kind of a flat organization.
Well, flat in the sense that in order to work at his company, you had to learn how to read a cartoon storyboard so that anybody could look at it and contribute jokes. And it was actually the guy in the mailroom who added all of the gay jokes that ended up in Ren and Stimpy. And so knowing that the head of the studio was gay-friendly ended up influencing the final product.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whenever you're talking about something, especially in the arts, because, like, video games, it is the arts. Maybe the way the industry is being run right now. I guess it's the difference between, like, cinema and Hollywood, where, like, Hollywood makes movies, but, like, you can make art from it as well. Yeah. Having somebody who's openly gay or openly gay-friendly can change the final product.
So let's talk about more about tech in terms of, like, the male-dominated field. So let's say you're developing an app.
Right.
So not video games, you're developing an app or something. You know, it's certainly... I know that if I was to go into a business or a field of work where I knew it was heavily male-dominated, I immediately would have this kind of preconceived idea of, ooh, is that gay-friendly?
Yeah.
Because very male-dominated spaces generally aren't that gay-friendly, at least historically.
Yeah.
You know, so knowing so-and-so is gay, such a business is gay.
The first, I guess you could call it an industry, but the first organization in Canada to give full coverage to trans members who are transitioning was the military. So, I mean, you always... You do have these nice rules of thumb that if it's stereotypically male-dominated, not just male-dominated, but like bro-dude male-dominated, you probably should not come out. But there's always these weird exceptions.
Mm-hmm. So is there a obligation, if you do own a business, to be out?
I would say to find the middle ground between both of you, the tech industry and the art industry.
Yeah.
Now, the art industry, it relies on creativity. So having gay men... or as the LGBT, the queer perspective in arts, is absolutely essential. In tech industry, however, it requires tacit knowledge. It requires experience. It requires knowing how to type a code. But that has, I wouldn't say it has nothing, but it has almost nothing to do with sexuality or gender.
Well, it also depends on, like, if you're working for Adobe and you're making the latest update to a PDF reader.
If you're talking about, like, the competencies to be successful and to be expectedly successful in an industry, it depends. For like, if you're talking about male-dominated industry, like tech industry, you can have a brilliant man like Tim Cook or anyone make it to the top. But even if he comes out as gay, that does not diminish his ability or his perspective or the respect people already have for him in the tech industry. But if you come out as gay as an actor who got famous by playing straight roles, that completely undermines everything.
I don't know. I think that's...
It can ruin a career, though. There have been a few actors whose careers were destroyed by coming out.
But we
don't just have to talk about male-dominated industries as well, because female-dominated industries, people who, like, openly lesbian or bisexual women who go into teaching and nursing have a lot of problems.
Yeah. But that's not...
That's not a small business. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I want to loop it back in. I believe that there is a moral obligation, because what it shows young LGBT entrepreneurs, if you are an openly gay person that owns a small business, is that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're a straight person thinking, gosh darn, can straight people open small businesses? They just have to look at, like, any small business. And it's usually run by a straight person.
Mm-hmm.
We've managed to name a few examples of queer-owned straight businesses that we know. Also, I think this loops in again.
Queer-owned small businesses.
Small businesses. So not only is there this idea of, you know, it kind of says, you know what? We know it's tough. We know it's hard. There's all these added barriers. But it can be done because, look, I've done it and I'm open and this is what I can do.
I would take a slightly more tempered position. And
I
partly agree with you that... Only some of the time would you have an obligation, but most of the time you have far more to win than lose by being openly out. Again, talking about, like, the video game industry and the arts.
What about the carpet cleaning? What do you gain from being openly gay?
I think if you're an openly lesbian carpet cleaner, I think that's just hilarious. And I think you should come out so that you could put punny things on your advertisements.
I guess because of my personal background, I actually see a lot of... Well, I can see both sides, but I can see a lot of benefit from having LGBT-identified carpet cleaning business. For example...
Rugs so clean you can eat off of it.
Oh, my God. But
see?
I can't even...
That is what they need to do. That is, you have an obligation to be an openly lesbian carpet cleaner.
That is hilarious. But at the same time, they would also get a lot of customers, and like the, because just the connection alone by having LGBTQ identified business, mm-hmm. you get more customers anyway. And maybe
you might, depending on how you go about it.
It may or may not upset them, like the amount of customers you may or may not get from being LGBT. But at the same time, it adds that layer to your business that kind of retain all the income and the outcome of those cash flows within the community. Mm-hmm. If you know what, like, if you know business concept, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because if you have a bunch of business helping each other out in a business network, that money, that income from using each other's services, it only mm-hmm. accumulate. It doesn't go out.
So you might have a carpet cleaning company that cleans the carpets at the front of Bridgehead, where you buy your coffee, mm-hmm. and so on. It keeps it in. And I think you've done a brilliant job of looping us back to the idea of queer businesses. What surprised me most out of this session was that queer businesses still create that sense of queer community.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because we've talked about this before, that if I'm going to go somewhere to buy a coffee, I don't think I've bought a coffee in Tim Hortons in a long time.
Yeah.
But if there's a Bridgehead, I'd go there, because I know it's local, I know it's queer-owned.
Yeah.
Support your own.
You know? I have a tendency to support Second Cup, because mm-hmm. they were the first corporation in Canada to extend mm-hmm. benefits to same-sex couples.
Yeah.
And people don't forget that. Like, that's...
There's a lot of things that people don't forget. I remember my grandmother still shop at the same... This very bad grocery store. So it was supposed to close down like years ago. But the only reason they were staying up was because it was the building they were in is a government-owned. So the government subsidizing the supermarket, even though it's so bad. But it's the first supermarket that ever accepted... it sounds bad, but woman currency. Okay. I grew up in Vietnam. So, like, having, a feminist supermarket is a big thing. Mm. And my grandmother remembered for 80 years. And 80 years, she still go to the same business.
It's like ketchup.
Heinz.
Heinz moved that ketchup processing plant out of Canada.
Yeah.
And what was it? Was it, what was the brand that bought it up, the same plant?
French's
mustard.
But it wasn't just the processing plant. It was the, I think it was something like 500 acres of tomato fields associated with it, and the thousands of jobs, not only in the plant, but also in the tomato farming industry.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because like in Southern Ontario, you can get a bushel. I have no idea what a bushel is in modern...
In tomatoes, you're talking about 50 or 60 tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a large volume of tomatoes.
Actually, that's a half bushel, because we've got a half bushel before.
Yeah, it's about 100.
Like 100, 120.
You could fill a backpack with a half bushel.
Yeah. A lot. It's a lot of tomatoes.
You can get a lot of tomatoes for like $10 off the side of the road if you actually go into the countryside to the tomato region.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of like really old-fashioned, like post-colonial traditional sauces, like Piccadilly sauce, and there's a form of chili sauce that's only really made in Ontario that has cloves in it. It's spicy and delicious and just a little bit. Anyway,
this is a lot of cooking.
I know, I love it. But anyway, that whole thing, like it wasn't just... a ketchup processing plant, and it wasn't just the tomato fields, but it was also like 150 years of Southern Ontario history.
Well, business nowadays.
It was the community.
Yeah.
So I'm in Ottawa. I'm a buyer of French's mustard.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, French's ketchup.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Business nowadays is not, it's not one dimension. It has multi dimensions, and it has a culture, it has a personality, it has an identity. So by identifying your business with LGBTQ identification, it's kind of, it has its downside, it has its upside, but it's kind of embracing your LGBTQ identity, and that brings a part of you into the business. So that's kind of what you need to consider.
I think it might just be millennials, but I know for me, I like to know where my money is going. I like to know that if I'm buying a beer, that it was brewed 20 minutes
ago. It's the emotional attachment.
It is. You know, buy local. If I want to... We actually only get our sex products at Wicked Wonders because I know the lady that runs the store.
Yeah.
You know, we know that, you know, the money's not going to go to some multinational stakeholder.
We also know they have 3 people on staff that do extensive background research on all their products to make sure
that it's not just
ethical.
That. It's the idea... So
having ethical products is...
So you
pretty
were,
good.
You were saying earlier about, you know, sometimes you might risk being out if you're an openly gay business versus maybe the benefits. I think you need to do the math. Are you going to have less bigots shopping at your store who won't shop from homos? oh, are you going to have more homos coming and supporting you because now they know that you're a homo business?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a check and it's a balancing act. Depends on maybe the industry. But you know what?
Or the number of news stories there have been over the past 15, 20 years of a bakery that refused to make a gay wedding cake.
Yeah.
And then some other bakery in town is like, we'll make your cake for you and at a discount. And then that store ends
up... is where all the gay men get their cakes.
Not just that,
not the
but
gay
like,
men, they don't eat carbs. But
everyone with a gay sibling or a cousin or a best friend who's gay, to support them, they also go to the gay wedding cake.
It's association.
Because they can eat carbs, so it's okay.
Well, it's an association, right? Because you associate that bakery with homosexual, not homosexuality, but
well,
you know,
with positive,
yeah, it's with inclusiveness. So that's what you get when you kind of do the whole LGBT identification thing and the accreditation from CLG.
The Canadian Gay and Lesbian Chamber of Commerce. Getting accredited certainly does help. It opens up those doors to Corporate Canada that he mentioned. We didn't really talk about Corporate Canada much, mainly because I don't like big business. But that's that's an aside. That's all for now, though. We're going to be playing out with B-52s and Rome.
Yes.
You mentioned it was their last big hit.
It was their last chart-topping hit. And a lot of people just forget that it exists. Everybody remembers Love Shack, and quite a few people remember Rock Lobster. And Alex, who's one of our long-term listeners, he has a thing for the song Wig. And seriously, if you ever ask him, what's that on your head? He will just jump up and yell, a wig! And it's hilarious. Look up wig, but it's hard to find. It's not on YouTube.
Crazy.
You're going to have to dig for it. But anyway, yes, Rome.
That's all for now. This is B-52's Rome, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for listening.